our media relations director sent me that picture. Not to say that I like shed a tear, but like I had like a wave of emotion to see all of my like closest friends and family standing on like are a big like Detroit Lions, and a lot of people are Lions fans back home. I am not one of them, sorry, Detroit. To see have everybody stand on the field and like see the happiness and the joy and the excitement in their face was like a that's why you do it, to have like those moments that like people can talk about for like forever.
Freddie Walker, best handlebar mustache in all of Power Five college football. Let's go. Assistant Director of Football Sports Performance and Applied Sports Scientist at Iowa State in his third season, having stopped along the way beforehand at Pitt, Illinois, Michigan State, as well as being a football player himself at Bowling Green State University. How are you doing today, sir?
Great, great. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing fantastic. And Freddie was one of the people I had a chance to connect with when I first started doing my job searching and stuff. You are in my original kind of Excel sheet planning all that out. So I'm glad that you have stuck around through all this time. I really enjoyed our chats, and it's funny how the real ones stick around. There's some people that I haven't touched base with in a little while, but now we get to record one of our conversations, and I get to see that mustache in real time, as it's just been phone calls up to this point. So we will get into it. What is kind of the most fundamental kind of fork in the road moment? Like looking back, that's probably the biggest decision that if you took a right instead of a left, all of this would be a little different.
Man, I would say early on in my career, I guess really early on in school, the one that comes to mind first is I left high school as a film major. Like we did like a TV news show
Oh my gosh.
as like a junior and senior in high school, and I just thought like, man, I love being behind the lens. I love the producing and like getting a show together and then watching people's reactions every week when we had the show come out. So I was like dead set I was going to be like a film producer or something with filmmaking. I went to college, and in like that first semester, bro, it was wild. These people are like, yeah, do you know this executive producer and this executive producer? Man, can you believe this guy's show and what he's written? And then I'm like, I know who like Michael Bay and like the normal
Steven
people know,
Spielberg.
like Jerry Bruckheimer, like yeah. And they were like, oh yeah, those are like big names, but do you know this guy, his art is amazing. I'm like, ooh, this is not my crowd. And then playing football and training and growing up like seemingly like in a gym or a weight room, I kind of gravitated towards that. And once I found out that there were collegiate strength coaches where you could do it for a job, I was like, oh yeah, I should be over there. So I think without that decision process and decision making, I feel like again, we may not be sitting here today, which is crazy to think about, because ever since then, it's just kind of built one thing on another.
It is kind of crazy, like that it was one decision. Like
Yeah.
I walked on at my university, and like literally, if coach cut me, I don't even know where I would be, to be honest. I would have been a frat bro, which is kind of scary to think. So we
Not
can
that
all
there's anything wrong with that. Not that there's anything
th
wrong with that.
probably with our target audience, probably there is something wrong with that. But yeah, it is crazy, like. Because I knew I wanted to do exercise science because I like PT, or I went to PT and I was like, oh, I can work with athletes. And then it was athletic training. And of course, everyone's like, oh, you're an athlete, you're studying exercise science, you know? So I bet you probably had a little bit different experience walking in. I would assume you probably weren't a small person playing D1 football, walking into to film 101 on day one.
Yeah, when going in there for sure, like most of the like kids in there look like they had been sitting in a dark room, like most of the time, and like either editing film or like making movies. And I was not your atypical film major walking in there, who's spent like the previous summer getting ready for like college football. Yeah, no, I was definitely didn't, I wasn't a film type guy, so.
I must say, as I do some freelance videography stuff for 1080 Motion, and I have my own YouTube videos that I'm making stuff, I always equate it to training, as everything kind of comes back to training, as we talked about beforehand, as like there's these principles that guide, you know, how do you set up a shot? Where do you put the person? Where do you put the lighting? You know, you have to like tell the story, but how it actually comes to be, you kind of make up as you go, or, you know, just because you're getting all those pieces right doesn't mean that it's going to end up super great. So like, there's these principles of training, like specificity, progressive overload, et cetera, et cetera. But to put all that together in a program with your athletes to make it flow and all this stuff is definitely the art itself. So have you been able to kind of stick with that film stuff, or as soon as you switched majors, that was like out?
You know what? I feel like, one, I really appreciate that perspective and the fact that you can coincide those two and correlate filmmaking to training. Like, you really got it bad for this training thing. But no, I do agree. I think there are some things that like the general population may not realize about like filmmaking, because I do still have a love for like movies and shows and the way they go about making them. One of like the first lessons in that first major in one of my film classes was, there's a movie called Run Lola Run. It was like a European film that like literally, I feel like the main character, all she did was like the beginning of the movie, she sprang out of bed and like took off running out the door from like, I don't know, someone or something. And the whole movie, she's like running or trying to keep running. But what they went over in my class was like, not necessarily what you're seeing on the film, but the way they shot different shots. Like if it's an aerial shot or if the camera's running with her and it's jumbling all around, so everything you see in the picture you see is just all over the place. It was that the filmmaker and the cameraman were using the lens to like make you feel her like sense of urgency, or make you feel like sitting in your chair, make you feel like, man, I'm running, I'm frantic, like, because the camera's going everywhere and your perspective is that like all this is changing. So just minor details like that, I think they carry over into coaching and training, like you're saying, because part of what we do, right, is the cultural piece and an atmosphere and an environment that's positive, that has high energy, that is somewhere people want to come in. And when they come in or they see you, all of a sudden, like something in them stirs, like, oh man, like either like we're about to get after, or we're about to get better, or man, this is going to be worth my time. Right? Like everybody sat through a bad movie. Nobody likes that. But everybody also knows when you've sat through, you know, one of the last Dark Knight movies, and like you're walking out in tears because it was so good, but it was 3 hours of your life. Like, it's a good investment. You know what I mean? So I think that as coaches, the technical piece is very important, but also like the relationship, cultural, environment, all those things play a major role, which is no different than these filmmakers doing small details, like just placing the camera somewhere different. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's important. I think it's cool.
And the end product, the end consumer can appreciate, but they can't put their finger on those little things like you using specific words, or you intentionally being a little quieter one day when there's no need to bring the juice, or when they walk in a little bit dead, you intentionally turn it up. Like, there's all those things. Once you do get behind the camera, you understand everything that goes into it and you can super, super appreciate it, versus the outside consumer, like probably just the average, you know, football player is like, oh, this guy just brings good juice. But like, oh no, that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, sorry.
I was going to say, like, you're, to keep on the film tip, like, most people don't realize in those horror movies, like, again, when it gets really quiet in a horror movie, I'm already, like, suspicious, because, like, I know there's a setup. But, like, those minor details of, like, maybe it's in the weight room where we're making guys, like, we tell one guy and he's now got to echo whatever it is to the rest of the group. Like, those little things that carry over, and it's training habits with, like, the weight room that is going to carry over hopefully onto the field or court or, you know, whatever playing surface they're at.
And like those things not happening, like you said, the movie being quiet, like yesterday, I had a high schooler. He's going to play D3 baseball. He like ran almost a PR. And then I was like, do you just not even want to mess with the 1080 and kind of just run the lasers and just see how you feel? And then he's like, yeah, I feel like really good. And he ran like a little bit faster for like 5 sprints with adequate rest. And I like had to stay out of my own way, but I was intentionally not saying anything, because I was like, I don't want to mess this up. He's just feeling good today. So even when stuff's not happening, like there's usually a good coaches, like they have a reason to not say something. And that's the biggest thing teaching our interns is like, when they almost hop in and coach, it's like, no, I saw the same thing, but there's a reason why I didn't say, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, so the reason I got into like filmmaking, videography, well, partly it was COVID, but I love those little documentaries that are more personal, like on YouTube. And I went through a little CrossFit phase. Don't judge me when all the gyms were closed and stuff in COVID. And I guess because CrossFitters, there's not that much money. They have these like YouTube channels and they like pay a videographer to like follow them around for their workouts and stuff. And they all have their own little like documentary piece about themselves. And it looks so good, but it's personal. Right. And that's what like drew me into it. And then I would watch these like tutorials on how to make this stuff. And I got myself a camera and it's like the different lenses, the focal lengths, the composition of a shot. I was like, it's so objective. It makes so much sense. But I'm like, but how do you do it live? Like, how do you, you know? So it definitely like trying to make that analogy, it definitely makes sense. Like, that's why I think I was able to pick it up decently well. But yeah, everything is a lot like training for sure.
Yeah. Well, again, even that, like the documentary piece, the filmmaking behind those, because you think about it, that you're trying to capture things that are just naturally happening. You're not manufacturing shots.
Yes.
Like Hollywood, you got markers and you're putting someone right there. It's a ready action. And now you're like capturing what they're doing. Whereas like a documentary, like if you don't got the camera in the right place while something's going on, like, shot gone, you know what I mean? I tip my cap to you, sir, for dipping into the documentary. Documentary filmmaking.
And then if anyone's seen those like 3 to 4 minute marketing videos 1080 has recently put out, I might know who made those. But what's that movie, that more recent war movie, 1980? Don't roast me.
Oh, 1912.
Yeah, 1912. I'm assuming you saw that. So last question on this topic. Could you explain to like the lay person, the average strength coach, how impressive a movie like that is and why it's impressive?
I will say this. I, at that time, everything was, I don't know, crazy busy in my life or something happened where I couldn't give that movie the focus that it needed. So I have not seen that.
Oh man. All right. Well, anyways, so 1912, it won all these awards because it looks like one continuous shot. I personally haven't seen it, but I know that it's super, super good. So if anyone wants to know what really good filmmaking looks like, watch 1912. And maybe if you watch it before Freddie, you can send him a message and say aha. But so cool little intro, a little bit different background and beginning story. But next we'll get into kind of the middle. So the coolest / craziest story you have thus far?
Man, it took me a while to think about this one because I feel like as coaches, and not to say I'm old, I try to joke with my players because I'm like, how old do you think I am? And they're always like 25, 26. And I'm like, appreciate you guys. but turning 35 this year, crazy. Also being in strength and conditioning 10 years now. Again, still not as long as some of the legends in the game, but I feel like you can always pick out, right? And why we get into this is the relationship piece. Like, I got into it because there were so many people that helped me, and in nature, I feel like I'm kind of built to try to like help people, and I don't mind being behind the scenes. I like to try and help people achieve their goals. So with that being said, naturally, I feel like you're going to have some former players or some people come back. Hopefully, if you do this correctly, you have some people come back and say like, hey man, thank you. Like at the time you didn't know, but that helped me more than you thought, or man, that really like spurred me on to something greater. I feel like as coaches, you should have those stories and you should have those athletes that come back. So I didn't pick one of those. And honestly, I picked one of the more minor, seemingly minor memories to me, which is a big thing, but our first bowl win at the University of Pittsburgh. So we were, I was with Dave Andrews there for 5 years, kind of as his like number two right-hand man, helping with anything and everything as always. But with Coach Narduzzi, you know, we went to bowl games the entirety that we were there, except for 1 year, but we couldn't get that win at the end of the year. our fifth year, we went to the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit. Okay, so not like your marquee bowl game where like New Year's Six, like we didn't go to like the Orange Bowl or anything like that. But I'm from Michigan. I grew up like an hour and 15 minutes from Detroit. So a lot of my family and everybody were at, they were at that game, and it was our first win, and I got to have them come down on the field after the game, and they got to like basically celebrate with me after that victory. And again, it was seemingly like 5 years of work to like get to that point. Now, we had already been in the ACC championship, so like that was a crown moment. We didn't win. It was Clemson, the year Clemson won the national championship. So,
I mean, if you're gonna lose to someone,
rough
year.
Trevor Lawrence, good player.
He's okay.
But when we got to Detroit, we won that bowl game, and it was a culmination of like a really tough year and really long 5 years of trying to get a bowl win and then having my family there. I had a picture taken after the game, like one of the professional photographers that was there, and I couldn't find it for the longest. And then we ended up coming here to Iowa State. But like 2 months later, our media relations director sent me that picture. And like, not to say that I like shed a tear, but like I had like a wave of emotion to see all of my like closest friends and family standing on like, for, like are a big like Detroit Lions, and a lot of people are Lions fans back home. I am not one of them, sorry, Detroit. But to see, have everybody stand on the field and like see the happiness and the joy and the excitement in their face was like a, that's why you do it, to have like those moments that like people can talk about for like forever. That was a really cool and like awesome moment, like personal for me.
So building up to that for like 5 years. So of course the goal is always a natty, but like there's only one natty, right? And then the next best thing is like a conference championship, but a bowl win, like what was it like navigating those conversations when the win didn't come, or not trying to sell the players on this dream that like seemed impossible? Because for 5 years, then there's kids that like their freshman year, they lost a bowl game, you know, like their entire time it was bowl, lose. So what was it like speaking about the relationships, like with the, not, I guess we'll start with the coaches. How did kind of the head coach and the rest of the staff manage those kind of conversations? And then like yourself interacting with the players whenever that topic got brought up, kind of what was your plan of attack?
Man, it's one of those things, right, where like you may not win, and the wins or losses are like, it's hairline thin, but you have to trust your plan, right? Like you have to trust your plan. You got to trust like the process to it. And I feel like every year when we got there, we were competitive in our bowl games. Like we never got blown out or anything like that. But there was always just one thing that was just a hair off. So really, I think it's just like a refinement. Like we never threw the baby out with the bathwater. We never like completely took a right turn or anything like that. Like we just kind of stayed the course. And honestly, those seniors that year, they were just really tough kids. Not to say that the kids before them weren't, but I feel like, again, going through different losses at the end of the year, like they almost had like something to prove, you know what I mean? And I think they took it upon themselves, like a chip on their shoulder, that they were like, they were going to go win that game regardless, because it was to that point that like they had had the MO that they couldn't win like a postseason bowl game or anything like that. And I think as coaches, it was just to continue to empower that type of like mindset, and that, yeah, you don't have to change much, but maybe it's your mental preparation. Maybe it's outside this. It's not necessarily doing more in the sense of like physically, like we don't need to practice more harder, anything like that. It's, you know, maybe it's like your focus level, right? Like take a look in the mirror, and are you watching all the film that you can watch? Are you preparing like you should be preparing? Are you sleeping? You're supposed to be sleeping. And I feel like those kids and those players did a really good job with that and accepting that challenge into that postseason. I think they did a really good job.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said on not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And like, if you're getting there, chances are you're doing a lot of things right. But people can get so hung up on, like, think about, what is it? Probably takes you 13, 14 games to get there times 60 minutes. And then you're gonna throw out all those minutes plus the entire year of prep for like the last 15 that could have like made or lost you the game. You know, it's like, it's so winning is this weird thing where you can do everything right, but it just doesn't pan out. So that's tough when like, that is the end goal and you can do everything right. And to get to that point in time, chances are you have done a lot of things right. So I bet that was some pretty kind of enlightening conversations with the kids and just encouraging as well. It's like, homie, that was great. Like, you know, like 7 times out of 10, we'll win that game, you know, just happened to be one of those three, I guess. So super interesting. And I guess last kind of question on the topic is that pick, well, I guess you do have a missus, but where does that pick fall relative to, is it printed and framed? Is it one of your two backgrounds? Where is that picture currently lying relative to you?
That one is saved and is, I got to find the right frame and I need to find the right printout. But that one will be hung up in said soon to be, not yet to be, futuristic man cave. Somewhere, whenever that is built and done. Got some remodeling on the forefront. So yeah, once that's done, that'll be definitely blown up, framed, printed, and hung up down in the man cave.
Last question. What are the top three components to your man cave / the keys to a man cave?
Oh man. I would say, okay, number one, being former athlete and a coach, I feel like you got to have sports memorabilia, right? You got to have some sports memorabilia. Personal artifacts of sports memorabilia, also a plus. Going into the next would be, again, my nerd side of things. I'll probably have quite a bit of nerd content. So anything Star Wars, Marvel, you know, your entertainment Hollywood fix is in there. And then got to go with a plush chair and a good TV.
Yeah.
Plush chair and a good TV. You have to.
Is there going to be any gaming going on? Whether pool, video games, ping pong?
You know, I've been lobbying for a PS5 for a while. Luckily, the availability hasn't been there anyway, so I got nothing to cry about. But hopefully we'll see a turn here in the next year or two. I don't know. just keep our fingers crossed. But yeah, we'll see.
Fingers crossed for sure. So last big question. So the story that you are most proud of, or the biggest full circle moment. So one that like definitely took a few years to look back and be like, that was definitely how it should have been.
So we had these kind of in advance. So I did have some prep time. Mm-hmm. I may have thrown an early answer out, but
change it. Remix.
Thinking about it now, I think honestly, and I don't even know if he knows this, and I'll use this, and it just literally just popped in my mind. And not to say that I'm living on somebody else's accolades, but at the end of the 2015 season at Pittsburgh, we had a running back by the name of James Conner. Some people might know who he is, but he, that fall, had an MCL tear. Seemingly his like season was over. He was the ACC player of the year prior in 2014. He had an MCL tear, so he's out for the year. We thought, again, bad luck, sucks, but at least it happened there. We'll get him fixed up, ready to roll. And then really, it seemed like he was going to be off to the NFL. That November, I believe, we found out that he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. He was one of the guys, and there was like a handful of guys that you always get close with. It just kind of like your personalities mesh. He was one of the guys I hadn't gotten close with prior to that. And I had an opportunity to go to a different university after that season, after that first season at Pittsburgh. I entertained it. It probably would have been a great, great pick. And I ended up turning it down. One of my mentors was Ken Manny from Michigan State, previously from Michigan State. And I remember calling him, man, and his advice to me was that he was like, in the moment, you'll never know if a decision is the right decision, right? You got to pick what's on your heart, what's on your mind, and what's important to you and your people. I wasn't married yet at the time, but I did consult my girlfriend because she's now my wife. So thank goodness I did that. But talking through those things with those type of people, he's like, man, if you would have told me, because again, Ken Manny stayed at Michigan State for like 30 years, 25 years. as the head strength coach. Wow. And he was Nick Saban's strength coach at Toledo. He was the strength coach at Michigan State for Nick Saban and some other people while they were there. And I believe Coach Saban tried to recruit him to, like, again, Miami Dolphins, to LSU, and I believe maybe to Bama. Like, he tried to recruit him everywhere he went, but he always stayed at Michigan State. And he said that it wasn't until that they, like, won the Rose Bowl that, like, that moment he finally realized, like, wow, that, like, it was all worth it staying at Michigan State all those years. Like, that made his time and effort worth it. One of the things now, and I made a decision at that point in 2016 to stay at Pittsburgh instead of taking that other opportunity. And one of the big reasons was because, like, being close with James, I didn't want to leave him during that time. Again, he was starting chemotherapy, guys going through cancer treatment. He's training his way through it. And I just, like, I wanted to be there, like, just in case. You never know, like, if it's important to people or not. And I remember that whole winter, like, the guy would go in for chemo and he would come into the weight room as soon as, like, he was done with chemo. And he would either get on the bike or get on the treadmill. He would either walk or jog, or he would bike to try and sweat it out. And I remember him going through that whole winter, and just, like, I appreciated being able to, like, be there for him. Like, again, just bring some positive vibes and, like, try to help him through that. We found out that summer that he was, after chemo and everything, cancer free. And I picked up. So after I got done with football, I started doing, like, triathlon training because I needed, like, something to exert myself.
Gross. Cardio.
Yeah. Who loves it, right? Water is resistance, though. So it's kind of like lifting.
Okay. All right.
My back did get pretty big.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Swimmers are yoked.
So that summer, I was, like, I got back into my triathlon training, and he knew, like, I always went and swam up at, like, the university pool. And he was like, hey, I'm trying to get in shape. Like, I want to, like, let me come swim with you. So that was part of his, like, as soon as he got done with chemo, he would come, like, to the pool with me after he was cancer free. That summer, he would come to the pool with me all the time and just, like, swim or do, like, water aerobics or whatever it may be, but just, like, extra cardio. So we spent a lot of time together that summer. And then to see him through that next season and make his return to football, and then after that get drafted. And then, honestly, it was full circle. Story short was, this year he had one of the best seasons he's had in the NFL. He moved to the Arizona Cardinals from the Pittsburgh Steelers, had an amazing year scoring crazy amount of touchdowns, went to the Pro Bowl. And me and my wife were actually able, I think it was at the end of the season, they played the Chicago Bears. Coldest game ever, by the way. So cold.
Of course.
But we got to go to Chicago. We drove over to Chicago from Iowa. Got to see him the night before, got to see him, like, during, like, right before the game. And then he ended up having, like, a crazy one-handed, like, sideline catch where he turned up the sideline and scored another touchdown. So, like, just to be there for that moment, getting to see, like, his mom in the stands and everything like that. And, like, man, like, I'm really glad I ended up staying and I still had a relationship with him to this day. It was, like, a really cool moment, like, as a coach to, like, maintain that. Cause I do try to, like, still talk to, like, whatever close group of guys I have, I try to reach out, make sure they're good. But to be there and watch, like, again, what that guy went through and, like, how he stayed positive and just, like, grinded his way through it into where he's at now is, like, it's really cool.
All the factors that go into it. And it's not saying, oh, you know, this one player, but I guess, like, I want to learn a little bit more about that process, because I've been looking for jobs and I'm starting to enjoy this one a lot / learn that whatever is next is going to be pretty freaking sweet, even though I'm intentionally pursuing it, even though it's kind of vague, but it's going to be sweet. It'll be a hard decision. So, like, can we kind of just go more into that process? And, like, were you seeking out that opportunity? Was it someone who you knew that presented it to you? Kind of like any other of those details, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Initially, how that started was in December, I got a call from a previous mentor of mine who I had worked for, former supervisor, and he let me know, like, hey, somebody was calling, they had an opening, this institution, and I gave him your name. They asked about, like, who I had that was, you know, this characteristic, this detail. I was like, hey, Freddie Walker is your guy. is what he told this person. So it's a facto. They called me, asked if I was interested. We kind of had a little bit of talking there back and forth, which I, with who had called, I was interested. I wasn't looking for anything. But I went through the interview process. So that way I got to meet everybody. I got to kind of be a day in the life and see what it felt like. And I think one of the big things that goes into it is I'm big on like environment, right? Like you are who you're around. So I feel like when I got to spend that day at this institution, I got a feel for the people I would be working with. I got a feel for the people I'd be working for. I got a feel for, again, when people know it or not, like again, that energy just kind of like radiates, right? And I honestly, in my being, like I just didn't get a good vibe off of that place, which isn't a bad thing. Like they had a great thing going where I was at for my visit, but it just didn't fit me as far as like the cultural piece, like the staff and the families and kind of their mission at that point in my life. Like I wasn't dug in like they were dug in. So we were kind of two different paths. And I think you just have to be honest with yourself and that if you can't just make a decision because it's flashy, like it's gotta feel right. I'm a big gut person. Like it's, if it's not right in my gut, then like I can't go with it. Now I am sporadic and I will make more of a brash decision than most impulse buyer, if you will. But I feel like those things, they got to weigh and you got to let them weigh and you just got to take it for what it is. One quote by Coach Tomlin that I love is you have to let people show you who they are. Because in itself, like people will show you, like you just can't like put a veil over people because you want to, you know what I mean? Like they're going to show you, but you have to also be aware enough to like see what they're trying to tell you. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And especially with jobs or just decisions kind of like that, I think taking a step back and being like, why am I making this decision? Because that's something where if I was offered a job like 2 years ago, I would have taken it to not be where I'm currently at. Mm-hmm. And now, whatever's next, although I'm super open to it, it's going to be because it's a better situation than what I'm currently in. So talk about like gut and instinct. And I guess I'll try to bring this back to film stuff. So you can have like everything right. And like, especially when I'm like editing videos, there's like one cut or one shot. I'm like, I don't know what it is, but that just doesn't look like right to me, you know? Cause I'll have my timeline, I'll blow it up full screen. And I'll just like, well, I'm just like, I don't know like what it is, but I'm going to like figure it out. And instead of being like, oh, here's my new opportunity, or feeling obligated because, you know, your mentor threw your name out there or whatever it may be, or, oh, I guess it's time to move on to what's next. It's like, well, like, why am I moving on? Or like, why is it off to me? And taking some time and like, I don't know, letting yourself have some time. I would assume that this was probably over a week or 2 weeks from the first phone call to kind of making that decision. But some valuable lessons to be learned, whether it's editing YouTube videos or career choices. So
right.
I guess I completely didn't blow that one.
As you say, I think they could both be considered life choices. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. One video could change your life. So
it could. It could. It's crazy. Like, yeah, just like social media and all that stuff. But gosh, cool.
It's
so,
its own beast.
It is. Oh my gosh. That's a whole different convo. So last question, not a big story, but so as much as I love these stories, lessons, and experiences, and that's what my podcast is predicated on, the X's and O's are what we do. But at the end of the day, like you said, there's all these stories. Like you didn't talk about James Conner's squat or bench or what you got to sprint down to, you know, it was like the relationships and him joining you in the pool, you know, so that's why I make this content. But at the end of the day, you have to be good at what you do to put yourself in the situations. So to help us all get better, what is one question you think the listener can ask themselves, whether it's putting a sticky note on their mirror or just like a reminder every Sunday night on their phone that can help them become better?
Man, I think the biggest things, and it's always like we're always limited by our own perspective. Mine, what I try to ask myself all the time and every day is, and I learned this from grad school, is am I like in training, am I being critical? Right? Like, am I doing something because it's the best thing that fits the time allotted, the athlete's availability, where we're at in the training cycle? And then, is it something brand new that I have to teach that's going to cost a lot of time? Or is it something that's like time efficient? It's the biggest bang for our buck. I think you have to be critical when it comes to those things because, like, the organization, like your training methods, like the relationship skills and communication, and like how you're going to get all these things across is so big and it's so impactful that if you're kind of just making the easy choice, I feel like you're doing one yourself a disservice as a professional. But again, everything that we do is for the people that we work for. Our players, our other coaches and support staff members, administration, all these people. And not to mention, most of our players are somebody's like child, right? So like you got parents, you got caretakers who have like entrusted you, especially in the collegiate realm, to help do what's best for these like players. So if you're not critically thinking about like what's the safest method and the most efficient and just in generally what's best for them on a given day, I think that it's a bad way to go. It's a bad road to go down as far as like the new age, and I would say performance coach, because I feel like strength and conditioning is almost like a misnomer nowadays. Again, not that I don't take pride in that, but I feel like we do so much more than just strength or conditioning that like performance to me is going to help guide us into the future. So like if you're not critical with that and you're not looking at the new science or looking at new methods that other people are doing, like, man, I can't tell you, every day I feel like I see with social media and different research tools, like people posting videos and things that like, man, great idea. Wow, can't believe somebody thought about that. Wow, yeah, that makes complete sense with the science. Wow, like that's super time efficient and you get everything done down a checklist with like one exercise like that. So creative. Like I'm like, man, like people are amazing. So like be critical, dig in, do your research, and then best you can. I told one of my former interns this yesterday. I was like, the KISS principle still applies. Like, keep it simple, stupid. Like, it was the best advice I ever got in grad school from my advisor, was like, KISS principle, lights out. I'm like, it's amazing. So again, you still have to be able to keep it simple, but be critical of like what you're doing and how you're going about it. And it might not just be like, again, your bench squat clean or like tendon stiffness reduction. It might not be your energy system training. It might just be how you organize all these pieces, right? Like you may have all these great ideas, but if you do everything, like you can't do a 3-hour training session every day. Doesn't happen. So like again, be critical and take time to lay everything out in the most efficient way possible.
Am I being simple for the sake of simplicity, or am I being simple because that's what I believe is going to be the most effective in the moment? Or can I be more efficient by maybe making it a little bit more complicated? Or is this athlete, the more complicated I get, there's really no point to it, you know? And it's kind of like if you trust your gut and then you confirm it with a little bit of thought after that. Or maybe if your gut is telling you the other way, be like, okay, something's not right here. I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. Or
Right.
I think I'm on the right track, but I just want to give it a little bit more 2 cents. Just asking those few more questions, whether it's consulting with mentors and stuff, or whether it's simply just like, I'm just gonna give myself space to think. You know, like there's
Right.
so
Like
much
try to
pressure.
just put yourself in like a different set of shoes, right? Like, I feel like again, being limited by myself and like in our own perspective, I try to like, how would, and we all have like really good friends, this feel like in training especially. So there's like a couple guys that I know kind of how they think as far as like training goes. So I try to put myself in their shoes, like what questions would they ask? Because I know that they would like dice whatever up like that I came up with. So I would try to ask and put myself in those guys' shoes, and then like how would they do this, and like what would they be like, Fred, what are you doing? Why is this there? I try to ask those questions because again, that's what's going to help you grow. So like try to look at it from a different lens, if you will.
Oh, Yeah, different focal lengths. Yeah, there we go. For sure. Yeah, I've quite the mentor that I'm super grateful to have, and I'm always like, what would he do right now? Or like, what would he think of this? Or like, could I justify my answer to him? Like, would he call me out on it? And that's just such a powerful exercise, whether it's in real time or whether it's just in your head, I think for sure. So having a simple system, like what would my buddy say? Or like, let's say if I had to explain this to an intern right now, like would they be able to get it?
Right.
I think it's such a powerful exercise.
100%, man. And I guess with that being said, I know we get caught up a lot of the time in the X's and the O's of training because most of us love training. I think the other thing in this is in training and just in life in general is to keep what's important important because everything can't be important because if everything's important, then nothing is. So spend your time wisely, both in training and in life, on what matters most.
For sure.
Keeping it
Can't
simple.
try to rephrase that any better. So we'll start wrapping this up. I'll roll out the red carpet kind of film. Roll out the red carpet to you to say thank you for your time, your stories, your candidness, and all the above. To shamelessly plug, emphasis in the shameless, whatever you got to plug, where can the listeners get more of Coach Walker and that mustache?
Oh, this is me. My any plugs I have.
Yeah, where can people get more Coach Freddie Walker?
Oh man, I am very lacking on the brand building and foundation here, but really cyclones.com right now. It's it's who pays the bills, and they're allowing me the space to kind of grow everything here at Iowa State sports science wise and football, and allow that space for me to also grow myself professionally. Digging into some cool things, trying to do some different things, and really just keep up with the field because I know there's a lot of great professionals out there right now, and I'm really loving the direction that strength and performance and conditioning and all these things are going, not just in football but across the board. So yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter. You can find my page, and also Instagram. That's a little more private, and honestly, it's not worth people's time because on there I say that. I'm a strength coach by day and not by social. So unfortunately, I don't
By
have a
day.
lot of like
That's
training
funny.
videos or anything like that. But I do at least try to on Twitter because there's so much information. I try to sift through some good things, sports science and performance wise, retweet some of that stuff. But that's all I got for right now. Yeah.
Fantastic. And we didn't even talk sports science. We'll save that maybe for a round two for sure.
There we go.
So thank you again, man. This was great. The product of multiple kind of phone calls, you being an awesome dude, continuing to give me your time. I enjoy our chats every time, and I'm glad we get to share this now with the rest of the world. So thank you, sir, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Same, Matt. I appreciate it, man. You're killing the game. As I say, I feel like every time I talk to you, the level goes up every time I see like one post to the next, and you seemingly are in contact with some of like the best and brightest in the field. And again, I feel like pretty soon you're going to be amongst that company, because again, you're killing the game. You're doing amazing, man.
Thank you. Thank you.